Welcome to What's Ailing America with your host, Dr. Rebecca Carling, the world's only court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases.
Namaste, and welcome back to another edition of What's Ailing America. One of your most important weapons in fighting the war on truth being waged against the people by the mainstream media. The views expressed on this broadcast are not endorsed by BBS Radio, its staff, or management, but represent the views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers. Additionally, the information I share with you is not to be construed as medical advice. Rather, I am merely teaching you what I would do if I were you after much research on each subject. To learn about my work explaining and reversing vaccine-induced diseases, please go to the www.drcarling.com and listen to the interview of myself by the Chiropractic Leadership Alliance to learn how I transformed from a trauma surgeon to a court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases and how the medical mafia has responded to my stepping out of the box. Make sure you sign up for the updates on my site as I send out important information you need to know to my list. That update software was hacked into, and I haven't been able to use it for a couple of weeks, but it's being fixed now, and hopefully I'll be able to start using it again very soon. I do consults for people and pets with autoimmune diseases, non-traumatic seizures, or cancer, and teach you how to reverse these conditions with natural therapies. I have clients all over the world and create your individual protocols based solely on history alone. You do not need to travel to North Carolina to see me in person. Please call me at 828-294-0662 between 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time any day of the week to learn how I do consults. My phone number is also on my website. And I encourage you to call, not email. I'm getting hundreds of emails a day, and I'm not able to keep up with it. I ask you to consider the information I share with you using your own innate intelligence, the common sense you were all given by your Creator. Do not believe anything I tell you. Check things out for yourself. For we have been lied to about everything, and each person must develop the ability to discern the truth for themselves if we are to extricate ourselves from the matrix of darkness that has evolved because we sat by and did nothing. My guests and I love to answer your questions, so feel free to call in. You can use your first name only if you like, and all shows are archived. The numbers to call in are listed on the bbsradio.com website station, too, and include the following. Toll-free USA and Canada, 888-228-4494. Toll-free worldwide, 877-489-6350. You can also use Skype at BBS Radio or PalTalk at bbsradio_com. Every week I will answer the question, What's Ailing America, with a different response, as well as share the good news as to what can heal America on many levels. My goal is to assist in the evolution of consciousness on this planet. For awareness of the truth shall set us free. And I know that once enough of us have become aware that we have been lied to about everything, including the fact that vaccines are good when they are actually inoculations with disease and thus are the true weapons of mass destruction, together we will be able to stop this holocaust on the health of people and pets. That truth, when put on top of the mountain of lies upon which this country is built, will cause the entire mountain of lies to crumble. It is time for everyone with a conscience to realize that if you don't stand up for the truth, you will fall for any lies. I can only show you the door. You have to walk through it. The question is, how far down the rabbit hole are you willing to go? On tonight's show, we will answer the question, What's Ailing America? With the answer, the medical mafia attacking good doctors. And I am very honored to have as my guest, Dr. Victoria Huffnagel, who has walked a very similar walk to me. It's very amazing how it all works out. She is also trained as a surgeon, only she was a gynecological surgeon. And her misfortune, as it was to realize that not only are hysterectomies being done on women at a 96% rate of them not being even needed to be done, but there are other ways of dealing with the problems that they do hysterectomies for. And her consequence to what has discovered we will be talking about tonight. And I encourage all of you to understand is that if you do not stand up for the doctors who are risking their lives, their livelihoods, their children, everything they have, you are not going to have anyone to stand in the midst for you when you have a problem and you need help, because the minions, the medical mafia, are only interested in creating disease and then treating them with very expensive and toxic drugs. As a matter of fact, I was sickened today. I happened to be listening to C-SPAN this morning. I turn it on a regular basis to see what they're up to down there in the District of Criminals. And the Department of Defense actually has a breast cancer research section. This was being discussed on some hearings in the House where they were, you know, pretending that they're going to do something about breast cancer and they're going to increase the funding. And when I heard that the Department of Defense has a breast cancer research section, well, that was quite interesting to me because I have in front of me the Special Virus Cancer Program Progress Report number 9 from 1972, where on page 177, they actually talk about, and I quote, the fact that breast cancer is one of the most likely forms of human cancer to be caused by viruses. And then they explain how they are researching this virus to cause breast cancer at the New York Medical College. Interesting how they pretend that they're helping us, and in fact they're creating ways to decrease the population. So, Dr. Hufnagel, I want to welcome you to the show. I'm so glad to have you on again. And if you could just give the listeners your resume, tell them, you know, where you trained and things of that nature.
Well, thank you, Dr. Carley. Well, I'm one of your academic-trained physicians. I attended UC San Francisco and graduated from medical school there. And while I was at medical school there, I was one of the people who found the problems with the Delcon shield and helped expose it. And I worked in an area called mycoplasma and chlamydia when people didn't even know what those diseases were. And
okay,
I went on.
Before you go on, just realize a lot of people don't know what you're talking about, and this is
right.
Important.
These are fancy names.
No, the Delcon shield. What is the Delcon shield, and what was the problem?
They had made a birth control device, a device that you placed in the uterus. And it's an IUD, intrauterine device.
Mm-hmm.
And you put it in the uterus, and what it would do is it would irritate the uterine lining to such a degree that pregnancy wouldn't occur. But the Delcon shield, when they made it, had a wick, W-I-C-K, a wick-like tail. The tail was the little end that came out into the vagina. And what this little wick actually did was it worked like straws, sucking bacteria up from the vagina into the uterus to cause severe infection. And many women died from this. They died from it.
Wow.
And I worked on exposing because nobody wanted to deal with the fact that the shield itself, the Delcon shield, and other IUDs, and other IUDs at the time, were causing serious complications and even death. So that went on. Then I went on to study at Albert Einstein College of Medicine as an oncology fellow. And as an oncology fellow there, I did cancer surgery and did some of the most difficult cases in the nation at the time. And we worked to develop new ways and new technology to save women's lives when they had really disease that everybody said was inoperable. So we were figuring out how to operate and remove cancer when everybody had given up on the woman.
Mm-hmm.
I was also an NIH fellow, National Institute of Health, with Mickey Golvis, and he's the gentleman who started the fetal surgery. And you may have heard of that, where they created operations to take fetuses who were going to die and make the changes that were needed for them in utero so that they could survive. And I was part of the fetal surgery team back in the 80s. So long academic medical background, and then I went to Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles. And as an attending physician, and while I was there, I saw discrepancies. I saw women and young girls, both, who were having their female organs removed, who had no significant disease. Repeat that for everyone. I was actually watching the operations, seeing the surgeons operate on simple things like an ovarian cyst, like a fibroid in the uterus. And I was watching these very simple conditions that could have been treated without removing the organs, that the organs were being removed. And I compiled data on that and went back to the National Institute of Health and worked with their statistics branch and did one of the largest studies ever done on hysterectomy in the U.S., which is a government-published document. And that document, we showed that about 600 to 650,000 hysterectomies are done every year, and only 4% of them are indicated. 4% had indication. That means there was a reason to do the hysterectomy.
Right. And so
96% had no reason.
Were being sterilized for no reason, and that usually involves taking out their ovaries as well, which basically makes them without their hormones being produced properly, and then they have to go on hormone replacement therapy and all this other garbage. But I just have to ask you, did you ever question any of these surgeons that were doing this and ask them as to the reason they were doing this? I mean, how did they even get these operations approved? I mean, you have to have a medical indication to do a hysterectomy. How does that happen?
There was no system at the time, and this was a common practice, and it still is a common practice today. If you have a symptom of bleeding or pain, a doctor can prescribe a hysterectomy, and you may have been bleeding and pain for some other reason, have nothing to do with the uterus, and they can still prescribe the hysterectomy and not be under any kind of scrutiny at all. None.
So I'm sure no doctor has ever lost their medical license for doing unnecessary hysterectomies.
Well, that was the next step. The next step was I wrote a book called No More Hysterectomies, and that book was published, and that book was used to write state law. And in California, New York, and Texas have laws now which require that in those states, you don't have one in North Carolina, you don't have that law in any other state, and it requires that the women be told all their options and choices prior to having a hysterectomy, including the cost, including what can happen down the road. And that's what I want everyone to listen to, what can happen down the road, and the type of anesthesia. Because a lot of women were having general anesthesia, and women did have complications from that. And most of the women didn't even need general anesthesia. But here was what the whole ball of wax turned out to be. Women did not know that hysterectomy increased their rate of osteoporosis, it's bone disease, and cardiac disease, 10 times the rate of a woman who did not have a hysterectomy, 10 times. And then the data we saw showed that these women were actually dying about 10 years earlier from these complications. Because you have a hysterectomy, you go on and live your life, you develop cardiac disease. You don't think that your high blood pressure or your coronary artery occlusion has anything to do with your hysterectomy. And it did, and it does today.
Okay,
so you're a woman out there, you know, women still are not educated about their bodies and how they work.
I just want to comment on the insanity of there having to be a law passed to give patients informed consent. The whole idea of informed consent from the get-go, without any law being passed as to what has to be in the informed consent, is that you tell a patient their alternatives what the ramifications are, the side effects, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, of course, in medical school, we're never taught any of these alternatives, and they are only interested in managing disease, and so this is how we've progressed down this slippery slope. But I just want to say it's very funny because the same New York State Medical Board that went after me because of my delusion of conspiracy that I did a TV show on about how they were covering up child abuse, that same New York State Medical Board covered up the rape of over 100 autistic children by a pedophile neurologist in upstate New York. And the New York State Legislature in 2003 passed a law that the New York State Medical Board must report criminal doctors. So it's very similar that they're having to pass laws that are so ridiculous because they should be doing these things without passing a law to begin with. But
right.
Before you go on, just make sure you tell the listeners where they can get your very important, groundbreaking book, No More Hysterectomies.
Well, you can go on the web and you can get it there. And then I have a new book out called No More Menopause, which is causing more revolutionary thought because I'm showing that women don't have to have menopause. I'm 59, and I'm working right now to have another child at 59. And I protected my body by using a program that kept my body healthy in terms of my hormone balance. So that you can get on Lulu, that's LULU.com. No more. And if you have any problems, any questions, I'm going to give out the personal phone number of my assistant. My assistant's phone number in Los Angeles, so don't call, you know, on an Eastern Standard Time. She's in a Pacific Standard Time. Her name is Esther Flores, and you can call her to get information, to find out how to use the websites, to find out about our work and what we're working on. We're, you know, as we speak, you can call her at 323-533-7006. That's 323-533-7006.
And I encourage all the listeners to get both of these books and give them as gifts to yourself or to any of the women in your life, because this is one of the biggest frauds that's being brought upon the females in this country and the world as well. And I'm so grateful to you for doing this groundbreaking research.
I couldn't help it. I couldn't help it. You know, when you know medicine and science and you watch normal organs be removed, it was upsetting to me. It upset me intellectually, number one. And then number two, because everybody was covering it up, from an ethical point of view, it was very upsetting. So emotionally, it's a charged issue when you see these things. And one of the things that got you in trouble and got me in trouble was the commitment and the fact that we weren't just doing this medicine to earn a living.
Right.
And if you're committed to the work, the system, you know, can't tell you what to do or force you to do something because you're not going to do it. You're only going to do what you think is right.
Because
and if you don't follow or toe the line, they will go after you.
Because you take the Hippocratic Oath seriously. First, do no harm. And that is one of my most difficult things to have to face. I mean, I went through a whole, what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross describes in her book On Death and Dying, that whole series of emotional reactions when I realized what my profession had become. It's such a difficult thing. And, yes, I am stricken with a conscience as well, and that's exactly the same reason that I decided to speak the truth. And I was very naive in the beginning when I realized not only what the vaccines were doing and had figured out the mechanism, but when I developed this protocol that's reversed over 2,000 cases of autism alone, I thought my profession would be happy, you know. But I was wrong.
Yes.
They are not happy. And this is how you realize, folks, that even though they complain about the gigantic budget that's only dwarfed by the defense budget that's spent on quote-unquote medical treatment in this country, that's exactly the program. They have so many lobbyists in Washington that are stuffing money in the back pockets of these legislators and other people that are you know, just keeping the status quo. They don't want to find the cure for anything because there's too much money to be made in the management of disease.
Well, and a lot of it can all, you know, with proper diagnosis and proper education, a lot of the things that we see, I know that we could cure uterine cancer and never see it again.
Yes,
because
you can
what
cure all
uterine cancer?
Yes,
uterine cancer. We can get rid of it. Uterine cancer is caused by a hormone imbalance,
mm-hmm.
the bottom line. And if we screen women and the ones that had an imbalance, taught them how to change their lifestyle, change maybe what they were eating, maybe they're eating too much soy products. There's many things that cause this, and it could all be changed, and that would be one cancer to get rid of right away.
Exactly.
Without a problem. Now, what happened, though, when we had these laws is that the laws were not enforced.
Surprise.
So, yeah. Currently, I'm the only physician in the U.S. who has ever written laws to protect consumers in medicine, in the field of medicine.
And
the laws that I wrote...
Please do mention the names of those legislators that you helped, because what I found extremely disgusting in your case was how you were actually closely involved with these women legislators. You helped them, and then when the medical mafia came after you, they did nothing. So please do mention their names so the people know who these people are.
Well, it was Senator Diane Watson, Senator Maxine Waters, Assemblywoman Helene Weinstein in New York, and they, you know, got their laws through and moved on with their careers, and the two senators in California are now congresswomen, and the toll that it paid, you know, cost me my career, destroyed my family life. I would have probably had a divorce either way, but... And certainly not a divorce where I was left penniless, where my ex-husband was able to walk off with everything. I mean, just one devastation after another. And there really is no one. When you're a whistleblower in medicine and you're a doctor, you have no support. Nobody wants to be around you because everybody's scared it's going to happen to them. And that's why you get no support. The other doctors, you know, are scared, well, look, she lost her license. I don't want to lose mine, so I don't want to, you know, say anything or do anything that could cost me.
Right.
And,
I'll keep killing people so I can keep a Mercedes in my driveway. And when you get a chance, go to my website, drcarlite.com, and read my Hippocratic Oath. I think you'll get a kick out of it. But, yes, this is what's happening, and this is why I'm so glad to have you on the show. People have to realize what's happening to the good doctors. The real doctors, the ones who take their oath seriously, who have risked everything to save lives and to keep people well, these are the doctors that are being destroyed in every way you can imagine. And these people are so evil. I mean, with me, they took my only child. I don't care about my medical license. But taking away my only child, that was pretty rotten. And in your case, they burned down your, was it your office? Or
office.
Your residence?
And they raided my, then they raided my home later. They came into my home with guns, took everything of any value out of my home. I had a complete computer network system. 5 books that I'd written for Time Warner, gone. 5 years of writing, everything gone. The disk's gone, the computer gone, the paper files gone, everything destroyed by them. And I was never charged with any crime, and I could not get my things back. I mean, it's insane. But I think what's really important is that everyone needs to understand is that there are good doctors.
Yes.
But there, you know, there's many good doctors, and then there's doctors who speak out. There's a big difference.
Yes.
And the ethical issue is that you can be a good doctor but have a lot of fear. And your fear is that if you say anything, that you're going to be attacked. And so they can be good people and good doctors but have so much fear that they don't step forward to try to make things better. And that is a big ethical issue because there is no support then when someone does speak out. There is no support. So we don't see change happen as fast as we need it to. Still today, hysterectomy rates have not diminished. And we've now instead have a lot of quackery going on We have people burning the lining of the uterus to treat women today. We have people putting pellets in the body, which actually can kill the entire uterus, and women can die from a pulmonary emboli from it. And this is called uterine artery embolization. So we swing the gamut, because what happens is you blow the whistle on the hysterectomy abuse, then some entrepreneurs in medicine come in with these new ideas and technology that they want to spread, and then it gets publicized, and the women are told all the issues. I mean, what in the world, you know, if you really told people, well, why are you plugging up your arteries with silicone? They think differently. But, you know, the women don't even know. It's an inert object we're doing.
Right.
You know, inert object, you know, and they don't tell them what the risks are. I have yet to find one woman who's had uterine artery embolization who was told all the complications. They just aren't told it. They're told that it's easy. I mean, Condoleezza Rice had the procedure. That's why she disappeared for a while, you know.
And they're not told the severe consequences of this. They're causing an infarct to that area of the uterus that's embolized, and the excuse is that arterial blood is feeding the fibroid. But, you know, you can just imagine the consequences of infarcting your uterus. It's just the same as infarcting your heart. I mean, the whole idea is totally insane. And especially when they had your surgical procedures that you had developed, it was in the 1980s, right, that you developed these procedures to spare the uterus?
Right. I started developing new surgical procedures, and I continue to work as a experimental surgeon to develop new operations. I mean, we have operations for all the cases that are called inoperable. Every case that you can imagine that, you know, that people say is inoperable. Adenomyosis is a disease that happens to women's uterus. They tell every woman that it's inoperable. We've operated and taught operations. My center has taught how to operate on adenomyosis for years. And women have gone and had babies after the female reconstructive surgery that we call it FRS, female reconstructive surgery of the uterus for adenomyosis. And these women have done well. You know, so it's a battle. It's a real battle.
But the good news is that there are some surgeons with a conscience who are being trained by you and using these techniques, even though they know that that could be a problem, correct?
Well, they just don't talk about it. And you know, we have a small group of surgeons right now, and we have our own center so that we can continue this work. And we don't do, you know, we offer to train all over the world. I had somebody in Dubai who did a total botched job, but it's really interesting. A lot of people, even when you offer to teach them, don't want to learn. I mean, this surgeon told this woman who was in Dubai that not to worry, that he could remove her fibroids through a laparoscope. Well, sure, he could remove one or two, but if she had 30 fibroids, removing one or two wasn't going to help her. But this is the kind of misinformation and marketing that's going on with women today. And women aren't taking a real serious look at their conditions. What they're doing is, oh, this sounds good. This is popular. Oh, this is cheaper. Or I don't have to go into the hospital. Or I don't have to have an incision. So anything that seems easier is better. I have right now a congressperson's assistant in Washington, D.C., we spoke for 2 years educating her about uterine artery embolization and explained to her why she shouldn't have it, what was wrong with it. She still went at it, and now she's worse off than ever. Her fibroids didn't go away. She's in pain all the time, and she nearly died from a stroke from that procedure.
Wow.
And when we asked her, why'd you do it, she said, well, the doctors kept saying I had to do something. And so that she felt that she was being hounded in order to take an action. And she took, you know, an action that she thought was going to be less complicated, less problematic, and ended up really destroying her organs and her life. She is still sick today.
Still sick today.
That's been 4 years now.
Well, it's so disgusting, and this is happening not just to women, but to men as well, of course. And And I'll never forget when I was a surgery resident, there was one time where I was asked to get consent for a 41-year-old black woman that they wanted to do a gastrectomy on. And for some ridiculous reason, I don't even remember what it was, but of course nobody had ever told her what is a gastrectomy. So when I went and did the informed consent, I told her what a gastrectomy is. I said, they're going to cut out your stomach. And if I was you, I would get your coat on and run out that door as fast as you can. And that's what she did. And those are the kinds of things that I used to do even as a resident because I couldn't tolerate seeing what I was seeing. They were basically using these people as experimental guinea pigs just to do studies on, especially at Kings County where I train, which is has a lot of poor people at that hospital. And this is still going on today, of course, in all the university centers. People think if they go to a university medical center, oh, they're going to get cutting-edge treatment. No, you're going to get experimented on like a lab rat, basically, and you're going to have all the lower-level residents in training practicing on you. That's what it boils down to, with sometimes very little oversight.
Well, sometimes with no oversight. Matt, when we look at the June death rates at any hospital, which is going to be happening now, now we're going into June and the new doctors come on board, and they're just let loose, and many times they don't have attendings who are making rounds, who are seeing every patient, and these poor young doctors, it's the way they learn. They learn by seeing what another person is doing or has done, and then they try to imitate it. But that doesn't mean that they're going to know how to do it. And at night, when the attending physicians go home, you're left with a bunch of medical students and residents to take care of people who have no experience.
Exactly. And as a matter of
June, we should have, June is, you know, what
well,
we should do.
July 1st. July 1st is when the changeover happens, And I can remember, actually, when I was the resident covering the surgical ICU at Kings County, we had 23 beds. These people were critically ill, 23 of them, and you had to manage them all night. And you were actually made to feel, if you called anybody higher up or, God forbid, you wake up an attending to ask a question, they would berate you and they would make you feel like garbage. So you learn very quickly.
Well, they call you stupid.
Right.
Are you stupid? Don't you know anything?
Right, you're better off just doing whatever and making friends with the nurses to hopefully tell you what they would do because they know more than you do at that point. And this is the situation that people are in. They have no clue how their lives are hanging in the balance, especially, like you said, June, July, when those transformations occur, when everybody moves up a notch and the new medical students come out of medical school and all of a sudden now they're white coats and they're writing prescriptions and they're making orders, and it's a very scary thing.
I think that, you know, we should have every month like a, we should have the woman's month, the men's month, and we should have the resident and teaching month, and actually have educational programs that we work as alternative and complementary doctors to inform the public about all these problems.
Right.
Public doesn't really know any of this.
Well, that's
and we
why
need to.
It has to be through the people. Because, you see, my work proves that vaccinations cause a corruption in the immune system that leads to all autoimmune diseases, non-traumatic seizures, and cancer in people and in pets. And I have a veterinarian that I work with, Dr. Patricia Jordan, who has backed me up totally on this. There's actually many veterinarians who are doing research in this area and are realizing how the pets are being destroyed. They have much shorter lifespans, and so they're like canaries in the coal mines. And one of the problems is that if you get rid of all chronic disease by stopping the inoculations, and if you teach people about the certain things they need to avoid, like aspartame, fluoride, pesticides, and things of that nature that are destroying their health, you know, there's not going to be a lot of work left for the doctors. There's going to be work for the surgeons, but, you know, the internal medicine people are going to have to find some other way to make a living. And that is the reason that they're so resistant to this. I've had so many people, too, especially there were two people that I had taught my protocol to who were both supposed to get liver transplants from hepatitis B, and neither of them needed their transplants by the time they got done with my protocol. They had two separate transplant surgeons. The transplant surgeons asked them, well, what did you do? How did you get rid of your hepatitis? And they told them, and the response was, well, I don't want to know about that. So that's what people have to realize. Not only are these white coats very arrogant, and they think they know everything, so they don't want to hear about anything else. But especially after you've, you know, invested, as I did, 17 years in my education after high school, it's not an easy thing to just throw that in the garbage and say, okay, I'm going to start all over and I'm going to do something different. Most of them aren't willing to do that. They're going to continue to do what they're doing, even though it's the wrong thing. And now our profession has been so corrupted where the ones who are doing the wrong thing are the ones promoted, the anti-Hippocratics, and the ones who are learning the true ways of healing are being destroyed.
Well, yes, and that's why we need to create a national union organization to fight back and to have a really comprehensive program for the public to know what their options and choices are and to, you know, really not have all of this hard work that we've done destroyed. In Germany today, you cannot buy vitamins. In the whole country of Germany, you cannot go into the local health food store or pharmacy and buy a vitamin. You have to have a prescription. You have to have a prescription from a physician. And alternative viewing is being destroyed in Germany right now. There was a plan, okay, we're going to change it. And I think what happens, though, is when you start telling these stories and you use the word conspiracy and you speak out and you try to show how insane it is, that it's looked at, especially by those that you're attacking, as you're the crazy one. Because, like, how could that ever happen? How could this ever exist? You know, and we need to educate people on the basics of medicine and science, and then they'll see how insane some of these behaviors are.
Right.
The other thing is we need to...
please comment on the conspiracy issue, because I just did a radio show with Janet Phelan on Wednesday night. She's a reporter that's revealing some very critical issues, including what's happening in medicine. We were talking about this issue of the conspiracy theory. That term was developed to basically make people who are talking about what's happening right before your very eyes, you know, as Looney Tunes. But it's not working, because if you look up the definition of conspiracy in Black's Law Dictionary, it's basically just a secret plan that's not being revealed to the public. And there's so many secret plans that are not being revealed to the public. And initially, it is a theory, and that's when they're doing the planning. And then when it's being put into practice, then it's a reality. And
okay, I'm going to give you a news piece. I'm going to give you something that very few people know about. I'm in my research and in my work. This is what I found out.
Okay.
And this I can say publicly, and it can be followed up on. There's a company out of Chicago whose name is Abelson Taylor. Abelson Taylor is a public relations firm, and their job is to spin tales, such as, you know, conspiracy theory. Their job is to create what is called disinformation.
Wow.
Disinformation.
Mm-hmm.
And they did work to cover up terrible things that happen in medicine, horrible things, and I'll give you one example. Years ago, the Nestle's company, who makes chocolate and many other food products, was worth billions and billions and billions of dollars, right? The Nestle's company. Shipped to Africa milk that they had made formula that they knew was not nutritional and that would kill a baby if that baby only had that milk and did not have breast milk. They marketed that milk in Africa, telling the black women there in Africa that, you know, if you don't give your child the best, which is our Nestle's formula, you know, you're not a good mother, and breastfeeding isn't any good. They did this for a long time, and over 400,000 infants died. 400,000 infant sites. And anybody can go on the web and look this up. But here was the key part. People didn't realize that a company, and many companies exist, Abelson Taylor is probably one of the biggest, though. Abelson Taylor is hired by companies to destroy people's career. They were hired to destroy me. I can tell you, I know there was a Dr. Barbara there, who was a neurologist who was incompetent and couldn't practice neurology. So they hired her, and she was sort of like the hitman on the list. And she, if I was going on any television show, if I was writing an article, if I was on the radio, she was there to call and tell them anything that she could make up. She'd make up stories. She'd tell them that I killed people. She'd tell them that, you know, just whatever she could. She told them that the AMA would sue them if they had me on the show. She told that to Today Show. So she was quite, quite out there. But this company went around to give disinformation so that that Nestle story, very few people have ever heard of, and, you know, people don't even know that it happened. It was another cover-up.
Right. So this woman, she was basically the equivalent of Stephen Barrett of Quackwatch. Have you appeared on Quackwatch?
Yes. She's a little bit worse because she likes to attack other women. I mean, she gets off on that too. She has some psychological disarray components going on with her.
Well, just in terms of what you were saying, as far as people finding good doctors, the first thing they could do is go to Quackwatch because, as far as I'm concerned, that's a who's who list of the cutting-edge people. And I don't even like that term alternative because the medical mafia invented that. Once you realize what alternative medicine is, there was no way you'd go back to the allopathic. But even Linus Pauling, who received a Nobel Prize for medicine with his vitamin C research, is on Quackwatch. So that's one place people can go to get the cutting-edge people. Okay, I just got a message. I think we have a caller on the line. Are you there, caller? Is the caller there? Okay, I guess they got cut up. Okay,
yeah, everybody should call in. We're here to answer your questions, talk with you, and speak the truth. Truth is beauty, and we need to heal. And the way we can do that is by working together.
Truth will set us free. And I just want to mention to you, because we have to have a chat someday and share some information. We can help each other. You were talking about how you were actually working with mycoplasma. Are you aware that there's a United States patent for pathogenic mycoplasma from September 7th of 1993?
Well, yeah. It would make sense, and since we were just learning about it, in the 70s.
No, but
so
the
by then
imagine,
we could create what we wanted with it.
They took a mycoplasma, which has been around for eons, and they made it pathogenic. They made it so, and then they patented it under patent 5,242,820 on September 7th of 1993. I have a copy of it in front of me. Dr. Xinqing Lo of the American Registry of Pathology in Washington, D.C. And this is what they're doing, is they're making these pathologic organisms, and they're putting them in all kinds of things, chemtrails, vaccinations. The mycoplasma is involved with the Gulf War plague. The Gulf War syndrome has other components, included depleted uranium, aspartame, pyridostigmine, et cetera. But the infectious component is this mycoplasma. And this is the hard thing for people to realize. One of my hardest things is to make people realize that this is how evil is, that they would do things like this, because if you have a conscience, you can't even comprehend that people that put their white coat on and take that Hippocratic oath and promise that they're going to first do no harm would become killers and would treat people as experimental lab rats and do all kinds of things to them, knowing that they're going to die, that they're going to suffer terrible consequences, and that they would do this for cash. You can't even imagine that this is going on.
It's not even that. They don't even see beyond what their first step is. So
well,
on mycoplasma here, excuse me?
I just said some of them do, but go ahead.
Know
what you're doing.
So, you look at mycoplasma and you go, oh, well, mycoplasma can be in the air. Therefore, people can cough, sneeze, breathe, and pass it. therefore it's a common way of being able to transmit, you know, so they get on that section of it and think about how they can, you know, use it to get a grant, to do the research, to make the money. And then one thing after another happens, and you can see how it evolves, you know, so that even the first person working on it may not have any idea what, you know, what the next researcher, what's going to happen next. But there are people, and I do know this for a fact, there are people, especially with diabetes, who knew and continued to use diabetic treatments that were could only kill people. I mean, knew it. And what happened was that they were getting stock options in the company.
Mm-hmm.
This goes on all the time.
Yeah.
You know, the people want to think that it's the white coats, it's medicine, it's not business. You need to step back and think, well, it is business. And then you have to think about, well, what do I want for myself? What do I want? How do I want to take care of myself? And what is best for me?
And this also gets you going down a spiritual path. I was very interested to hear you talk about how you started studying theology. And I haven't gone that route, but I definitely have done some very deep spiritual work, realizing that this is a spiritual war and understanding that this is good versus evil. And when you understand, we're not taught in medical school, you know, we had one surgeon where I trained, and we had the largest surgery residency in the country. And there was one surgeon who actually was quote-unquote religious. And she actually had a Bible with her, and she would bring it. And I'm sure she's probably a missionary now. And everybody would make fun of her. And the whole idea of a higher power being over us and having created us and given our bodies the ability to heal ourselves, it's totally, totally poo-pooed and ridiculed. The way that the white coats are trained is that you are gods, and you will decide who will live and who will die, and you have the power in your hands to heal, although that's a total fraud in most cases, but that you will be the one that figures out what's wrong with this person, and then they're going to get well. And unfortunately, usually they don't, because we're not taught how to heal. When I went to medical school, we had 10 hours of nutrition. I know you didn't have any, but we had 10 hours of nutrition, 2 years of pharmacology, and the nutrition was 4 hours on milk, which is a deadly poison, and 4 hours on the four food groups, which is a scam. And then we had 2 hours on vitamins, telling us that it creates expensive urine. So this is all planned out by the medical mafia. Have you ever read that book by Dr. Guylaine Lang Tote, The Medical Mafia?
Yes, I have.
Right. And she basically gives the whole history of how the medical profession was corrupted. The Rockefellers were highly involved. Coming into medicine in the 1940s and basically saying that all medical schools had to be standardized. So any of you that want to get the history on how this happened, I do encourage you to get that book, The Medical Mafia, by Dr. Guylaine Lang Tote, a Canadian physician. So the good news is there are a number of us that are stepping forward and doing the right thing, and it was really quite disgusting to me when you had mentioned yesterday on the show that when this first came to your consciousness what was going on, that you had gone to a rabbi to ask him, what should you do? And could you please tell the listeners how that conversation went down?
Well, what had happened was from going into the files and looking, I had seen that the statistics of normal organs being removed was not, you know, just something random that had happened, that it was, you know, very significant data, and the numbers were extremely high. And I went to Rabbi Meir and said, you know, what do I do about this? He basically said, you know, that no good deed goes unpunished.
Mm-hmm.
No good deed goes unpunished.
Which to me was disgusting for a quote-unquote religious person to tell you that. He's sending you a message. In other words, what would he as a rabbi do if somebody came to him with some very consequential, if he found out there was a Hitler in this country, what would he do? No good deed goes unpunished. That's one of the biggest problems we have, is so many of the quote-unquote religious leaders are also corrupted, and they're leading people, you know, off the cliff, all the sheep. It's really very sad. But
there is
have
good news. There's something
okay.
that's going on. There are departments of bioethics now developing, courses being taught, and bioethics, you know, are becoming actual departments. We have one, there's one at Loyola Marymount in Chicago. Stanford has a small division. One of the top people, actually, which you should interview, is in, I believe, North Carolina. And his name is Dr. John Banja. And John wrote a book on why the doctors do the bad things they do. It's like Why Doctors Do What They Do. That's the name.
Okay.
And what he did was he looked at them psychologically and found out that their issue of inadequacy, their need to be, their narcissism, you know, how narcissistic they were, all of these behavioral aspects led them to do terrible things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, it's not me, you know, it's not really out there for the public yet, but in time, you know, that's going to grow. And that's my area of work right now, is to bring bioethics, you know, to the mainstream for people to understand, you know, that we're really looking at this. I mean, many of the things that physicians do are not about medicine and science. They're driven by psychodynamic issues or money and greed.
And I totally support you in what you're doing, but as I was discussing on the show yesterday, they've actually now come up with a plan who they're going to let die when the bird flu pandemic occurs, not if but when, because they know it's going to occur when they, you know, bring out the bird flu vaccine. So all I propose to you is that they're developing, just like everything else, it's a Hegelian dialect. You know, you have a problem, reaction, solution. You get a problem, you have a reaction, and then you come up with a solution, and the solution always makes the problem worse. And I can assure you that lots of these ethics divisions of these hospitals that are being developed, they're going to be deciding who to let die. They're not going to be going after the doctors that are doing evil things, in my opinion. But also, I just hope that you will consider, and when you get a chance, read the documents on my website about what they're doing with the inoculations. Because I have a book published by NATO, the Life Sciences Division, in 1989, where they talk about how they've discovered that the aluminum adjuvant in vaccines is causing the IgE production, which is causing the life-threatening food allergies and anaphylactic shock. They have known this since the 80s, and they're giving it to children. And we now have children in cafeterias in this country that are smelling their neighbor's peanut butter sandwich and having cardiac arrest. And they know why this is happening. So this is a very important component of this ethical debate, not to mention the fact that they're using tissues from other species as well as aborted fetuses and injecting them into people, which is against any scripture, no matter what religion you are, and is a total spiritual assault. But I just want to say, Dr. Huffnagel, we only have 2 minutes left. We could talk for days. Please tell the listeners, what can they do for you to help you? Because I understand that they hacked into your computer and took out all of your disclaimers that you are not
right. We have
licensed.
To redo that.
Yes,
to help us, you can educate yourself. You can buy the books. You can have consults. You can donate money. You can donate time. You can call Esther Flores again at 323-533-7006. That's 323-533-7006. And briefly, as we close, my daughter was premature, and they wanted to give her all the vaccines, so I go in for the skin vaccine. And I was very worried and concerned, so I look it up. I found out, and I was the person who blew the whistle on that. It found out that the saving vaccine caused about 6,000 cases of polio a year.
Mm-hmm.
And the Salk vaccine was not having those results. And because the saving vaccine was cheaper, that's why we were using it, even though it wasn't as safe as the Salk vaccine. And that had been covered up for years. And why? Because they decided that cheaper was better and 6,000 lives were not that important.
Right. And then, of course, they changed the name of the polio contracted by the vaccine and call it aseptic meningitis, And then as a follow-up to that, we had the scandal develop where the SV40 virus was present in the monkey kidneys being used to make the vaccines, and God only knows how many thousands and thousands of people are developing cancers of all types today because they were injected with that virus. So this is the way it is, folks. We're basically out of time. I want to thank you so much, Dr. Huffnagel. You are a true sister. I am so glad that I was able to connect with you. And I ask you to please keep in touch with me, especially let me know what happens when these minions bring you up on misdemeanor criminal charges soon for practicing medicine without a license after they hacked into your computer.
One step at a time, and I'm here to report for you always on women's health care issues and any new whistleblowing we're working on, okay?
Okay, so I'm going to have you back on after that happens, and I send you my love and my support, and I'm going to tell everybody I know to check out your websites. Please just mention your websites again, please.
You can go to drhuffnagel.com. That's probably the primary one. It's drhuffnagel.com. And just pick up the phone and talk to Esther Flores, because we really feel that we need to connect with people and work with them. So 323-533-7006. And truth is beauty, and continue to focus on bringing transition in your life.
Will do.
Thank you so much, Dr. Carly.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Huffnagel. We'll be in touch. Good night, everybody. Make sure you tell everybody you know to listen to these archives. Bye-bye.